This is Fresh Air. When Pulitzer Prize winners were announced earlier this week, Aretha Franklin was honored with a special citation for what the jury called her indelible contribution to American music and culture for more than five decades. Franklin died last August at the age of 76. Her talents are also being celebrated with the release of a new documentary about her gospel performance recorded in 1972 at the New Temple Missionary Baptist Church in Watts, Los Angeles. Sidney Pollack directed a version of the film decades ago, but it was never released because of problems synchronizing the images and sound. Digital experts have solved those problems, and the film, called Amazing Grace, is now in theaters. Today we're going to hear some of Terry's conversation with Aretha Franklin, recorded in 1999. We'll start with an excerpt of that gospel performance in 1972.
Talk a little bit about the influences on you during your formative years. Your father, the Reverend C.L. Franklin, he was one of the mm-hmm. most popular preachers of his generation. He was nationally known through his tours and through, I think, radio broadcasts as well as recordings. You say in the book that church nurses carried smelling salts to revive worshipers who were overcome to the point of fainting by the Spirit or by your father's sermons. Mm-hmm. What was it like for you to watch your father speak and people fainting in church?
Well, it was tremendous. I love going to church, but as a young girl, I certainly enjoyed watching and listening to my dad.
You toured with your father through churches through the Deep South, and I'm wondering what it was like for you during the days of segregation to tour through the Deep South, you know, how that compared to what you were used to in Detroit?
Well, it certainly was not what I was used to or accustomed to in Detroit. There were times that we were asked to go to the back of the restaurant, say, or we couldn't use the bathrooms. We got information that you could use the bathrooms there if you, and we didn't buy gas where we could not use the restrooms. So we went to golf a lot, I must tell you.
Many singers who grew up in the church weren't allowed by their parents to listen to or to perform pop music. It wasn't that way in your family. What did your father think about pop music and jazz?
My dad, I think, appreciated gifted artists. We just didn't have that problem in our home. Rockin' with Leroy used to come on when I would come in from school. It was a very, very big R&B broadcast of the day when I was a young girl. My dad really appreciated music, and he never tried to limit us in any way with respect to music or anything like that.
Well, as you describe in your new autobiography, great performers like Nat Cole and Art Tatum knew your father and would sometimes be in your living room at the piano. That must have been
something. Yes, that's true. Art Tatum was often a visitor in our home. He was a very good friend of my dad's, Oscar Peterson. and Arthur Prysock, Mahalia Jackson, of course, James, and he loved Sam Cooke. And he just really very broadly appreciated one's artistry when they were truly gifted and really good.
With Sam Cooke, the great gospel singer turned soul singer. How did you meet?
Sam and I met at a Sunday evening program that we had at our church back in the early 50s. And I was sitting there waiting for the program to start after church. And I just happened to look back over my shoulder and I saw this group of people coming down the aisle, and oh my God, the man that was leading them, Sam, and his brother LC, and these guys were really super sharp. They had on beautiful blue and navy blue and brown trench coats, and I had never seen anyone quite as attractive, not a male as attractive as Sam was. And so prior to the program, my soul was kind of being stirred in another way.
Well, now, he crossed over from gospel to pop before you did. What impact did it have on you when you heard him having a hit pop song on the radio?
We were going down the highway. We were somewhere in the South. And my sister and I and the driver and maybe one or two other people in the car, we knew that he had left the gospel field. And, of course, I was rather sad about that. But as we were driving, we knew that he had recorded. And just out of the dark came this fabulous voice. And it was Sam, and it was his first record. And he was singing "You Send Me." And there was just pandemonium in the car. My sister and I just had a fit. Oh my God, it's Sam, it's Sam. It's his record, you know, it was like that. You send me, it's his record, you know, and there was just so much excitement in the car, the driver really had to pull over.
So did that make you think, maybe I should consider making pop records?
Well, I don't know at the time. I don't think that was my feeling, and it wasn't to begin with. I was interested in changing fields as well, but I was not as confident, I guess, as Sam was to begin with. And finally, I said, well, if Sam made it, maybe I could too. And I was willing to give it a try.
In 1966, after your contract with Columbia Records was up, you moved to Atlantic Records, which was the home of rhythm and blues greats like the Drifters, the Clovers, Ruth Brown, and Ray Charles. The producer Jerry Wexler took you down to a studio in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, that was famous for its great session men, which included Dan Penn and Spooner Oldham. Now, Spooner Oldham tells the story that when he heard you sit down at the piano and play your first chord, he thought, wow, that's really great. And that he's a pianist, that he should let you play piano while he moved over to electric piano playing behind you. Were you pleased that he agreed that you should be the one at the piano?
I remember that particular session. It was the very first session, so naturally, yes, I remember it. And we really were kind of struggling at that point to get to the music. It just wasn't quite coming off, although we had dynamite players. We had the Muscle Shoals section, and they were really very, very hot, cutting a lot of good greasy stuff, or what you would call greasy in that day. But we weren't getting to the music in the way that we should have. It just wasn't coming off. And finally, someone said, "Aretha, why don't you sit down and play?" And I did. And it just happened. It all just happened. We arrived, and we arrived very quickly.
Aretha Franklin spoke with Terry Gross in 1979. This week, Franklin was awarded a Pulitzer Prize Special Citation and a new documentary about her 1972 gospel performance called Amazing Grace is now in theaters. Franklin died last August at the age of 76.